Last year, South Carolina had the highest rate of domestic violence deaths in the country, and it has consistently placed in the top 10 states nationally in the rate of women killed by men. Domestic violence cuts across economic, racial, and cultural lines and can hide in plain sight, as these victims will tell you.
He was Mr. Charm at first, and then he turned out to be Mr. Harm.
Everyone in the community loved him. He had so many friends. He could have had it all. But he chose, by virtue of his own actions, to throw it all away.
He told me that he loved them, and, you know, he would never do anything to hurt him.
Everybody saw Dr. Jekyll. I was the only one that saw Mr. Hyde.
And then a month later, everything started changing.
There were nightly fights. Physical, emotional abuse was always in the house.
And I can really hear it to this day. I can, like, remember the scream.
To have to go in there and close off 5 of those caskets, it was just, you know, I just knew that there was no way that this is supposed to happen.
And I didn't even realize then that he was, like, really stabbing her. I just got seeing blood.
Very, very violent, very, very loud, very, very physical.
I was continuously assaulted at least 3 times a night. I was being raped.
And he said, I grabbed her by the neck and I twisted.
I turned up and looked up and I was in shock. I was like, a gun. And the last words he said to me were, if I can't have you, nobody can. And he pulled the trigger, and my head exploded.
Those were snippets of interviews conducted by the Charleston Post and Courier. In 2014, the newspaper published a 7-part series, Till Death Do Us Part, which won the Pulitzer Prize. That series is credited with being the catalyst South Carolinians needed to pay attention to the problem, which is now gaining traction in the South Carolina State Legislature. They are debating measures to strengthen the Palmetto State's domestic violence laws, including one measure that would prevent batterers from possessing guns. We're going to explore the problem of domestic violence and what the Charleston Post and Courier uncovered in the course of their investigation with one of the reporters who worked on the series. Doug Pardue is a special projects reporter at the Post and Courier. Prior to his joining that paper, he was new projects editor for USA Today, and he joins us from Charleston. Welcome.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Also with us is South Carolina State Senator Larry Martin, a Republican representing Pickens County, the chief architect of the Senate domestic violence bill now working its way through the legislature, and chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee there. Thank you, Senator, for being with us.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure.
And Laura Hudson is joining us. She's executive director of the South Carolina Crime Victims Council and a member of a domestic violence task force formed by Governor Nikki Haley in response to the Post and Courier series. Laura, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. I hope we get a better phone connection as we go through the program here. Prior to the Post and Courier's series on domestic violence in South Carolina, how well was the rate of its prevalence in South Carolina known by South Carolinians, Doug?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to congratulate Senator Martin on his efforts to bring this reform bill almost to a close, and I hope he can continue what he's doing and get it through the Senate next week. But that said, thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate that.
That said, the level of violence that was perpetrated on women and men, by the way, but we did focus on women because that seemed to be the biggest problem, was so amazingly extreme that we were stunned when we finally took a look at it. We were probably more shocked by the fact that we've ignored it so long, or just plainly didn't even recognize it for so long. But that wasn't unlike our state as a whole. Basically, this problem has gone on forever and has been documented for 17 years, and we've been in the top 10 of violence toward women, of death toward women, that entire time. Number one, 3 different times. As we started to research this, we focused on gathering the detail and the numbers of these women, and we found out that during the last 10 years, more than 300 women have been killed by domestic violence in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And just to give you a sense of that, that's one every 12 days. One woman dies every 12 days from domestic violence. That's 3 times the number of women have been killed in our state in this silent catastrophe, three times the number of all of our soldiers and sailors who have been killed in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. Mm. That's our South Carolina soldiers and sailors.
I mean, it is an amazing number of people. And as you say, it went on for years unrecognized and unnoticed. What made the Post and Courier notice it enough to devote the resources that newspapers have to devote to doing investigative series like this? What made them want to do it?
It was a combination of factors. Every year we do a story on it when this rating comes out. It's either done as a daily story or a weekend story. And one of our editors, Rick Nelson, who's our managing editor, had been wanting us to do something more, but it kind of got lost in everything else that was going on each time. And we're all kind of numb to these kinds of numbers in South Carolina. You turn around and virtually every list that comes out has us either at the top of every list you want to be at the bottom of every list you want to be at the top of. So we get a little numb to it sometimes. But this time, I had done a series not long before called Forgotten South Carolina about all the disparities in our state. And so I was doing follow-ups to that, and this looked like another example of disparities in our state. At the same time, one of my partners in our investigative team, Glenn Smith, wanted to do the story on the latest numbers. And he called into a press conference that was being done by advocates who had experts to talk to all the media in the state in a telephone conference about why we were so bad. And when he called in, you know, you beep in when you call in on a talk show like that, and on a press conference like that, and nobody else beeped in. So he was stunned that we were the only media in the entire state of South Carolina who was interested enough in it to call in. We all got together, talked about it, and decided we better take a look at this problem.
You know, one woman dying at the hands of a man every 12 days because of domestic violence over years and years of time, Senator Martin, seems like the people would be battering down the doors at the State House for a law to do makers do something about it. They weren't. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, you know, people live very busy lives. But now I will say this, and Laura can confirm this because we've worked together for many, many years, not only on this, but, you know, alcohol-related issues and a lot of victims' issues. But back in the 2000s, we actually had 10 years ago, a joint legislative committee on domestic violence. And I was involved in that. I'd been appointed to it by my predecessor. And we actually passed a couple things. Met a good number of times, produced a few reports, but the time frame for the committee expired. You know, we don't have permanent joint committees like that. But we did give it some emphasis back in, Laura, help me out, 2006 through maybe 2010. Yeah,
oh, yes. It's not been unnoticed by many in the House and the Senate, and it's certainly been something that's been on the forefront of victim advocates for years.
Right.
But the article in the Post and Courier, the way it was done, kind of brought it all to the forefront, and I certainly give you all credit for the impetus to do something on this issue. But it's not that it's not been on the forefront. The Attorney General has had, you know, annually a silent witness program,
right,
pointing out the deaths. It's not unnoticed, but many times getting a coalition together.
We're having a bad cell phone connection.
Yeah,
here.
We're getting a bad connection from Laura. But let me sort of build on that, if you
okay.
don't mind,
all right.
Mike and Doug. What the annual emphasis, the silent witness events around the state, they've been ongoing now probably for about 10 years. And, you know, every year I've met with these folks, and your heart just breaks for these victims that you encounter at every one of these ceremonies.
Well, I have to ask, because if I were in that position, that would be my response as well. So I have to ask, with 12 women dying woman dying every 12 days over the course of years and years and years, and you knowing about this in the State House and other lawmakers and police departments knowing about this around the state, what took so long?
Well, that's a good question, and I think Doug will attest to this, and Laura, the opposition that we had both in the Senate and in the House to the bill was pretty stout. yeah. in some respects.
And the opposition is based on what?
Yeah, Second Amendment rights, people's right to own a gun, even, you know, when they've been convicted or under an order of protection to stay away from a spouse or a partner that they've beaten or threatened, those kinds of things. And frankly, about the time the Post and Courier was doing its story, I called a prosecutor, and I shared this story with, because I live in the other end of the state, but was very aware. I talked to one of the reporters that was doing the story, and this was something that was on my radar. I've only been chairman of the judiciary in the Senate about 3 years now, and this had been something that I had been wanting to give some focus to, but again, we have some pretty serious opposition to doing certain things, and so I called a prosecutor who had testified, and Laura will remember this, who does nothing but handle domestic violence cases. And I called her, and I said, if you could do one thing, and she's in the Midlands. She had testified in front of our joint legislative committee several years ago. And I said, if you could do one thing, what would it be to diminish this death rate, get us out of the top 10 on the death rate for domestic violence? And she said, enact the federal gun ban. Didn't hesitate.
I guess that's why your first article says, awash in guns, saddled with ineffective laws and lacking enough shelters for the battered, the deck is stacked against women trapped in the cycle of abuse in South Carolina. And you started with the guns as part of that trifecta. They are the biggest problem, you say?
Well, guns are the easiest weapon. I don't know that you call them the biggest problem, but they are certainly the biggest easy weapon. They are our series, and when we looked at the numbers of deaths, and we evaluated the types of weapons that were used also, and guns were used in almost more than two-thirds of every single domestic killing.
But it's not, as you say, it's not just guns, and domestic violence has been falling nationally for 64% over the past 20 years, but not in South Carolina. So there must be something else going on in South Carolina, in the psyche of South Carolina. And Laura, the paper described the problem as a silent epidemic passed down generation after generation, seldom talked about outside the home. But everybody else in the country has been talking about it. Why not in South Carolina?
Well, that's a very difficult question. I mean, we do have a basically rural state, and we have, you know, attitudes. You know, I'm always saying, you know, it's an attitude seems to be from a man, you know, my home, you know, my truck, my dog, my cat, my children, my wife, and I'll do whatever I want to within those circumstances. And maybe that's too harsh, but that's kind of the, you know, and it's dressed up sometimes in a silk shirt, but that seems to be the attitude.
Okay. I want to come back to that. We have to take a break. That's Laura Hudson, Executive Director of the South Carolina Crime Victims Task Force, which was put together in response to the Charleston newspaper's story on this by Governor Nikki Haley. State Senator Larry Martin is with us from South Carolina, and Doug Pardue, a reporter for the Charleston Post and Courier. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Learning Society at Queen's University of Charlotte, a group commitment to ongoing learning and bringing national speakers to the community. Details on Learning Society memberships at queens.edu. Well, Monday is a holiday. It's Memorial Day. Get an American flag tattooed on your arm, because tattoos have been around almost since the beginning of time. But until recently, they were the province of a small subset of the population. But today, tattoos have become high art, and increasing numbers of people from all walks of life are becoming the canvas. When and why did that start? We're going to meet a National Geographic Society fellow who has looked into the history of this and talked to three local tattoo artists about the market for what they do. That's coming up Memorial Day Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. The NSA's bulk data collection faces a Friday deadline. A massive airbag recall could take years to complete. And the State Department is expected to release the first batch of Hillary Clinton's emails.
Join us for the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with Doug Pardue, a reporter for the Charleston Post and Courier, one of the people who worked on their seven-part series, which won the Pulitzer Prize on domestic violence in South Carolina, which got the attention of a lot of people in the state, including the legislature. State Senator Larry Martin is with us. He's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee there from Pickens County. And Laura Hudson, executive director of the South Carolina Crime Victims Task Force, which was created by Governor Nikki Haley in response to the Charleston Post and Courier's story about this. One of the things that has come up in this conversation is guns and the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. And do you think domestic abusers should keep their Second Amendment rights to own firearms? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter. You can search for WFAE or you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Let's get back to the rural nature of South Carolina. This conversation about domestic violence and the circle of domestic violence, because it does perpetuate itself in families, because people pattern their behavior after what they saw their parents do. And in many cases, if you see your father abusing your mother, you will abuse your wife or your girlfriend or somebody in your inner relationship, because that's what you have witnessed over time. But we've had this conversation going on nationally about this, and I think it's been an effective conversation if you believe the numbers that domestic violence fell 64% over the last 20 years in the rest of the country. But Laura Hudson, you pointed out that South Carolina is a relatively rural state. Outside of Greenville, Columbia, Charleston, most of the state is rural. Does the rural nature of the state make it more insular so there are fewer opportunities either to hear information about this or to have conversations in which you compare notes about this? Or is it simply that people who gravitate toward living in rural areas like living in those areas because it's their land? They're not encumbered by somebody telling them what to do, how to live, what color to paint their house. And by God, as you said, it's my dog, my wife, my house. I'll do what I want.
I do think that attitude exists in much of our state. On top of that, we have far fewer
I'm sorry, but can you try standing very still when you talk? Because you're in a very bad cell, I'm sorry to say. Try again, Laura.
Martin can tell you that I don't stand still very easily. but at any rate, should I repeat that?
Yeah, just part of it. Yes, can repeat it.
Well, I do think that one of the issues in our rural areas is the lack of resources. For instance, if you experience a criminal domestic in Richland County or in Greenville or in Spartanburg, you're going to have a lot of resources there for you, both from the private sector and from law enforcement and the courts. If that happens in Chester or it happens in your county, you're going to have
You're going to have a far tougher time in finding the help because it's simply not available. Surprisingly, according to the newspaper report in the Post and Courier, churches and pastors play a role in perpetuating domestic violence. I found this fascinating, Doug. The paper said that many pastors don't see domestic violence as a crime, merely as a family problem. How could they think and preach that?
Well, we didn't invent that. That came to us from ministers themselves. They were telling us they often felt very inadequate when it comes to domestic violence. First of all, I think part of it is because they don't really want to see it as domestic violence. They don't want to think in terms of this woman being beaten and brutalized by the husband. And I think they don't stand up to the occasion, and they prefer to see it as difficulties in a marriage, and they want to preserve the sacrament, and many people are brought up to believe in that sacrament. Let me just give you a little story that might help you understand a lot of what you're just now talking about. One of the first interviews that that we went out on, I went out on with our religion reporters, one of the fellow reporters in this project, Jennifer Haas. We went to talk to Elmira Raven, who runs the shelter for women in Charleston. And we asked her, what is it about South Carolina that causes us to have a rate of killing of women that's more than double the national average? What is it that makes us that way? And she started reeling off reasons. She talked about ruralism. She talked about Southern traditionalism. She talked about paternalism, poverty, unemployment. And then she said, and then there's that religion thing. And we said, what? What are you talking about? And she said, till death do us part. And we suddenly realized not only do we have a title to a series that we very early on, we realized that this was a deep component, because it not only was a problem for society, it was a problem for the victim. We ran into many victims who said that they would not leave because they believed the marriage was forever and they needed to stay there and make it work.
How much of this also has to do with the fact, particularly if you're in a rural area where you're cut off from a lot of connections from other people, and maybe your nearest neighbor is a mile away, and your only societal connection where you get together, maybe at church on Wednesday or Sunday or something like that, how much of it has to do with the old 1950s, 1940s throwback that the woman can't leave because she has no form of economic support and no support system?
A huge percentage of it. You've put your finger on part of the major problem. People keep asking the question, why doesn't the woman just leave? Well, that is a huge difficulty when you don't have a job, when you don't have any money, when you have children to deal with. And so how do you leave? You go to a women's shelter, which will allow you to stay for maybe 60 days. And then what do? You have no place to go still. You have no skills. You end up back at the home with the abuser. So it's a huge problem of trying to find ways to help women who are being brutalized to find a way to effectively not only get away, but then find a way to survive.
Evidently, Senator, South Carolina lawmakers had let a number of measures to combat domestic violence die in the legislature prior to the publishing of this story in the Charleston Post and Courier. What was it about this story that made the legislature and others take notice and start working on better laws?
Well, obviously, the compelling story, the series that was done, I mean, it was just... It hit every nerve that exists, and it exposed the raw edges of this terrible, terrible issue. You know, what Doug just mentioned, I wanted to just add that one of the problems we've had around the state, we didn't have shelters in a lot of our rural areas. My county, which is adjacent to Greenville, did not have a shelter until just the last 5 years, 5-6 years. But the community really came together and helped, put one together, and it's a very nice shelter here in Pickens County. And there's one in Oconee County, which is over, further away from Greenville than we are. And we had relied on Greenville for so many years, but there's just too much of it. And you can't have... with transportation being as it is, we don't have public transportation to speak of. You need those shelters in each county, and we don't have that.
There are more animal shelters in South Carolina than there are shelters for domestic violence.
Exactly. So that's been a tremendous improvement, I think, that we're seeing that develop in rural areas like Pickens has been, where traditionally we haven't had that. And I had sent to the House, and I don't remember this being I think it may have been mentioned in the series when I was interviewed at some point. I had sent to the House, and it's a bill that Laura Hudson and I had worked on, called a permanent no contact order. And I had sent that over out of the Senate, three different sessions, and never got a hearing on it in House Judiciary. Wouldn't take it up. And, I mean, over a period of 6 years, that came out of the study committee. That's how far back it goes as a recommendation that we do something, not require victims to go in every 6 months or every year to get a restraining order or no-contact order on an abuser, and can make it permanent under certain circumstances. And I couldn't even get that done.
Hmm.
And made it part of this bill, Senate Bill 3, and Laura, it wasn't lost on me, they changed the title of the, they left the section in, but they changed the way it referenced it. Instead of a no-contact order, it's permanent no-contact order. It says a permanent restraining order, which is, you know, neither here nor there. But I found it interesting to swallow it. Of course, they didn't want it in the bill. That was one thing. But to swallow it, they actually required us to change the name of it.
And explain this to me, because the paper points out that in South Carolina, a man can get 5 years in prison for abusing a dog, but a maximum of 30 days for beating his wife or girlfriend on a first offense. How can anybody explain that disparity?
Well, let me explain that. That was one of the defects in our domestic violence law. And that is not entirely accurate, Mike. We did pass and enact a criminal domestic violence of high and aggravated nature. We call it ABHAN for short. That would under existing law would get you up to 10 years, and it's a felony, and that's for, you know, assault and battery of pretty serious nature. So beating your spouse is more than 30 days. That's what we call the simple domestic violence charge under existing law, and that's basically, that can be nothing more than a threat. Or, and we included, that's one of the other changes we made in the law several years ago, we included threats, which are very serious. And but there was no intermediate, there were no intermediate charges that could be made above a 30-day simple CDV to assault and battery of high and aggravated nature, which is a felony, and a 10-year sentence. So beating your spouse could get you charged with that under existing law, but there was nothing to plead it down to. There was nothing second degree, third degree type charge, or first degree type domestic violence charges. Okay. We've corrected that in this bill. We have given, and I applaud the Attorney General for proposing this. I lifted it right out of his agenda, and it provides for third degree, which is a simple CDV. Nothing could be nothing more than a threat. No injury to speak of. Second degree, moderate bodily injury. Third degree, more egregious. And then, of course, we kept the high and aggravated nature statute, which goes to 20 years and a felony. So,
and where does that stand in the legislature at the moment?
It's in the bill.
Where does the bill stand in the legislature?
It's almost on the governor's desk. We got to deal with an amendment on Tuesday. We intend to send it back to the House for one more vote over there. Shouldn't be a problem. And let me just say, because of the lobbying, because of the great media attention, the Post and Courier and other media outlets have taken, you know, we've had editorials literally from every major newspaper around the state this session about this, and, you know, applauding what the Post and Courier has done. And the Post and Courier has really stayed on top of this throughout the session. So it's kept the fire and lit on the issue. So it's their help and the other allied groups that have come in to, you know, motivating us that really turned the tide over in the House. There was a point in time I didn't think the House was going to move on this thing.
So, Laura Hudson, you are the executive director of the South Carolina Crime Victims Task Force, which was appointed by Nikki Haley in response to this story in the Post and Courier. Stand very still when you answer this question. your task force has been charged with changing a culture that has enabled abusers and the deaths of hundreds of women. How will you accomplish that goal, changing a culture?
Well, I always point back to Mothers Against Driving when we started back in the 80s. You know, it was a big push to change the culture in how we thought about alcohol. And I guess it's going to take us a while. I hope it takes less time. But changing the culture is the difficult part. I say it's kind of like trying to turn a battleship around in a bathtub to get people to think about things differently. The task force, which I really applaud the governor for appointing it, we're in the middle of all of our discoveries, and one of the things that we're trying to correct is how we report domestic violence and trying to get a true picture of what's going on in our state. And that has been, you know, a challenge because we have so many fragmented reporting methods and so many fragmented computer systems. But that is one thing we're working on. We're also working on the money aspect, which brings me back to a comment about the resources from Senator Martin. One of the things I think the public doesn't really understand is that all the domestic violence shelters are coming from people that have, you know, given their money to do it, crime victims themselves, a lot of federal money, and very little state money. Our state general fund does not support any of these efforts. It never has. I think we have, you know, almost a million dollars we get from taking a portion of marriage license fees that, you know, is a drop in the bucket for our needs. And we really need to applaud all of those men and women who are out in our state that have cobbled together enough money to have these shelters and to have these organizations. Because it has been an act of love and concern from citizens that have made that come together. Mm. We don't have enough money from the state to do that, and changing that culture and that is part of the task force is looking at all those money sources. I've been embroiled in that for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Trying to come up with where we're getting money and where we need more.
Doug, many of the lawmakers, I would say most of the lawmakers in South Carolina, have been traditionally men. You have a female governor there now, but most of the laws have been made by men, and many of the lawmakers in the legislature are criminal defense attorneys, who I learned that from your story, and that might lead them to be suspicious of laws that might hurt the criminal defendants because that's how they make their living. How big a role does that play in this in 45 seconds or less?
All right. excuse me. I think the senator hit this correctly earlier when he said there are wedge issues. He pointed to the gun issue as one of the key ones, but you're hitting another one. There is a big tendency to want to protect individual rights and to not make an abuser lose his rights automatically, and many of those are procedural, and many of those are the ability to plead a case down to assault so that you're not stuck with this kind of a stigma on your record for the rest of your life. So you're correct with that. But
we have to take a break, Doug. We'll come back. I'll let you finish your thought on the other side of the break. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Mint Museum, hosting Party in the Park on May 27th with outdoor activities, a cash bar, and food trucks, summer tunes, and a movie under the stars. Registration available at mintmuseum.org. The NSA's bulk data collection faces a Friday deadline. A massive airbag recall could take years to complete, and the State Department makes plans to release the first batch of Hillary Clinton's emails. Just some of the top stories from this week that will be re-discussed on the Weekly News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. The National Hour first, the International Hour at 11. And if you'd like to join our conversation about domestic violence in South Carolina, now's the time. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Gillian Flynn brings us characters we love to hate, like in her bestseller, Gone Girl. But for the Morning Edition Book Club, she chose an author with a different approach, Kate Atkinson.
She does this wonderful thing for her. She makes it very hard for you to solely dislike a character, even when they're doing very bad things.
The book is A God in Ruins by Kate Atkinson. Read it, and we'll talk about it on Morning Edition.
The Morning Edition Book Club, June 16th, starting at 5 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about domestic violence, particularly domestic violence as it is perpetrated at an alarming rate in South Carolina, our neighbor to the south. Laura Hudson is with us. She's the executive director of a crime victims task force put together by Governor Nikki Haley in South Carolina to work on this problem. State Senator Larry Martin has been working on it in the state legislature. He's a senator from Pickens County and the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Doug Pardue is one of the reporters who worked on this seven-part series for the Charleston Post and Courier called Till Death Do Us Part, which won the Pulitzer Prize. We were talking about the plethora of male lawmakers and the plethora of those lawmakers being criminal defense attorneys prior to the break, Doug, and what the impact that may have had over the years on this foot dragging on legislation to protect victims.
Well, as I indicated earlier, the fact that many of legislators are lawmakers means that they they're lawyers means that that they are inclined to really look out for individual rights, and as defense attorneys, that's one of their goals. And so they see increasing laws cracking down on domestic violence as potential interference or trampling on the rights of individuals. Now, that's a very important thing when you talk about the culture of our state and why the culture of our state tolerates or allows domestic violence to be so pervasive. Oddly enough, if you really take a look at the history of the state, we are one of the few of the original 13 colonies that wasn't really set up for some noble purpose. We were set up more in the hope that certain individuals who had the means could make money and could profit here. So we have long been a state that is very interested in individual rights. We are anti-regulation, which means we tend to be anti-government, which means we tend to not want rules and regulations. I was interviewing Walter Edgar, the state's preeminent historian, and he told me one time, I asked him, well, why is it that we don't seem to want to help people or stop these many of the things that go wrong in this state? And he said, Doug, you know, I hate to say this, but I think the prevailing attitude in this state, and it's cultural, he said, is that I've got mine. If you don't have yours, it's your own damn fault.
Wow. Statistics show that about a third of those charged with domestic violence killings in South Carolina over the past decade had at least one prior arrest for domestic violence or assault. So given that, the high association of the use of guns in domestic killings, should those with prior convictions not lose their rights to own guns?
That's one of the huge problems. Go ahead, Senator.
That's what we attempted to deal with in the bill. When I got to researching it, you know, I learned that states like Texas, Louisiana, Tennessee, West Virginia, just in the southeast here, had enacted a state gun ban on previous convictions for domestic violence, misdemeanor convictions. And, you know, I looked at that, and I looked at what Louisiana had done in particular, because Louisiana historically has had a significant death rate similar to ours. They were number one in 2013, or number two. They were number two. We were number one, and they actually did something in 2014 to address their problem. So, and that's what I copied the Louisiana gun ban in my original bill. I probably should have copied the Tennessee ban because it was a permanent deal, but I copied Louisiana because I thought I'd be able to say, well, you know, Governor Jindal, a Republican, and a Republican legislature in Louisiana actually implemented it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yesterday, if I'm not incorrect about this, the South Carolina House unanimously approved a domestic violence bill that added an amendment enacting a lifetime ban on gun ownership for those convicted of criminal domestic violence of a high and aggravated nature. Is that true?
That's true. That's a 20-year provision.
How will that impact? Because I know all these bills go through committees to compromise, and so that the thing can be voted on and sent to the governor for her signature. How will that impact your bill?
Well, that's in my bill.
Okay.
The 20-year provision. The lifetime ban, I had a 10-year provision like Louisiana did on all levels, and of course, they weakened, I say they moved down the 10-year provision on second degree down to 3 years, which we ultimately have compromised on. And then the Senate actually lifted the mandatory nature of the 10-year ban in the Senate version, and it on a final vote over there, it was 22-20 to make that discretionary on the orders of protection, and the orders are the third-degree convictions. But it's still far better than anything we've got now.
So, Doug Pardue, given the conservative nature of the state and the conservative, even some of the more conservative things that you didn't know about before you did this series, how big a move is this? This seems like a major step.
I applaud the senator and his House co-workers on this compromise effort. It may not be what it was ultimately what we would our series indicates we need, but they are so close to getting it. I can do nothing but applaud them. I think this addresses one of the central problems of the of domestic violence in the state, and as Laura said, the culture is the other part. But the third part that's missing here is one of the biggest problems we've had is not so much the laws, even though our laws have been terribly inadequate. It's been enforcement of those laws. Some of the biggest problems is the way the police deal with domestic violence and the way the courts deal with domestic violence and the way prosecutors deal with domestic violence. We find that in the case of many men who are convicted of domestic violence, the problem is not with those who are convicted of high and aggravated assault. The problem is with those who assault their wives and are charged with misdemeanor domestic violence, mm-hmm. and then can get the case annulled. So we found that in the metro area of Charleston, almost half of, or even more in some cases, of all cases of first-time domestic violence were expunged from the records completely. So the next time they came to court, maybe in a different jurisdiction somewhere else, no one had any idea these guys had been convicted.
Why? Is it because law enforcement is not equipped to handle this? There's not enough training? There's not enough ability to recognize what it is? Or is it simply an extension of that belief that this is a family matter and not really a law enforcement matter?
Every one of the things you just mentioned is the case.
Okay.
We found that across the board, police agencies do not recognize it. They do believe it's pretty much between a man and a wife. They don't want to get involved. It is one of the most dangerous activities police can deal with is domestic violence. And then when they get in the courts don't view it all that dangerously. There are several places where there's a big difference on this. Lexington County has a very effective combination system there where the sheriff's department and the courts work together with counselors, and they are showing some remarkable improvements in the way they deal with domestic violence.
But again,
Charleston is making some work at it.
Lexington County is and Richland County make up the county surrounding the city of Columbia. So that is another indication that urban areas in South Carolina are more well-equipped and perhaps ahead of the more rural counties.
Correct.
The Post and Courier reported on Monday about behind-the-scenes negotiations in the State House that could result in these tougher domestic violence laws, including tougher gun laws and stronger penalties. But the compromise, you say, would allow prosecutors to plead down domestic violence charges to assault and battery, which would help offenders avoid losing their right to have a firearm. Is that really a compromise or just another loophole that maintains the status quo?
Well, it is a compromise, and, you know, I didn't want that language to be in there, but the practical effect, and Doug will tell you, and Laura in particular, because she understands how our courts work probably better than I do, that as a practical matter, they can plead now to
yes,
assault.
And they do that.
And they do that a lot. You know, what I intend to do, I'm on what's called the Prosecution Coordination Commission. It involves all our prosecutors, the chief of SLED, the attorney general. We have an annual meeting in September. One of the things I intend to tell that group when I meet with them, and of course the attorney general is going to be there, is, guys, we've given you the tools. It's up to you to use the tools and the toolbox mm-hmm. to address this problem. And
I agree completely with the senator in that area.
That's exactly. And you know, don't come whining to me when you know, somebody's pled down to assault and battery, and then they go out and kill their spouse, and that makes the news, and it's going to be on your head when that happens. And you better, you know, my message to them is going to be, use the tools we've given you, make domestic violence the stigma that nobody wants to wear around their neck, you know, job-wise, community-wise, or whatever. We need domestic violence needs to be, in my opinion, something that nobody wants to get caught up in, and therefore you just don't do it.
Yeah, Senator Martin, Doug Perdue has been, he's the reporter, for those listening, for the Charleston Post and Courier that kind of brought all this to the forefront, the front burner in South Carolina. He's been very complimentary of you and your efforts to fix the laws in South Carolina and to make them more strong, to make them stronger. But he also points out that a lot of bills to fix some of these problems in South Carolina have languished in committee over the years. Five got hung up in the Senate Judiciary Committee, which you chair. And yet you're quoted as saying you're not sure why the bills failed to advance. How can you not know?
Well, I mean, they got assigned to a subcommittee, and, you know, all I can do is ask members to consider them. I can't make any member consider them. But then again, you get back, we have a pretty high number of lawyers on our committee, obviously. I'm not one, but we do have a fairly disproportionate number because it is a judiciary committee. But you know, we did pass some things out that just never got, you know, completely through the process. It wasn't total benign neglect on our part. And
well,
and you know,
Laura.
Well, let me break in here. You know, I don't want to be, you know, the person that totally criticizes all the time, but the problem has been the House Judiciary, not the Senate. The Senate has done their work pretty consistently on this issue for the last, you know, 12 years that I'm aware of. And when we get over to the House Judiciary, we fall into the great black hole of defense attorneys. I was so offended that I left the floor of the House when this was being debated, because 80% of the conversation was about protecting the perpetrator and very little about victims and what we were trying to do for them. And that seems to be the attitude, and it makes me angry every year.
In the context of what the senator just said about not, you know, don't let this be a burden on you as lawmakers. Get out in front of this issue. Don't come back and be blamed for domestic violence. How do you explain the behavior in the House?
Well, let me just say this. The House has come around. They've come along under the leadership of Jay Lucas, the speaker. He you know, met with the chairman of the judiciary over there. I talked with him, and I think and Shannon Erickson, let me just say, she's been a real trooper having to navigate all that over in the House. The representative from Beaufort that I paid tribute on the floor yesterday too. I mean, she's done a great job. But you know, again, you get back to the loophole, some of the just foolishness that gets thrown out there in the way of developing good public policy that you have to wade through.
So,
and we're still doing that. And Laura will tell you, after we reached an understanding with our counterparts over there as to how we would proceed and get this bill to the finish line, again, at the urging of the speaker over in the House, and the chairman came around, we still got a provision in there we're going to have to take out that shouldn't be in our, it shouldn't be in our amendment, but it got in there. And so that's why we got to amend it and send it back to the House. But I don't want to say any more about that because I think it's going to be fine.
So, Laura, the governor, Nikki Haley, what does she want to see? And under South Carolina's system of government, I'm not sure how strong the governor is, but how powerful can she be in being a spearhead to make sure this happens in South, these new changes take place in South Carolina?
Well, I don't think we know completely the answer to how powerful she can be in this issue, but she has certainly taken the lead. And I applaud her for that, that she is, you know, using the influence that she has to make this come to the forefront. There have been a series of community hearings that she has allowed us to do and to get input from the people who are actually suffering from these injustices. She has put together a huge task force of all the stakeholders we could find that would have an interest in this, including defense attorneys. And putting in, you know, a lot of work on coming back with a plan. We're now in phase two of, all right, we've discovered all of our problems and we bellyache about it. Now what are we going to do about it? So we're coming back with recommendations, and I'm looking forward to all of those committees coming together with those recommendations. And I applaud her for that, and we shall see what kind of influence it can have on our system.
Laura Hudson is executive director of the South Carolina Crime Victims Task Force, appointed by Governor Nikki Haley in that state. State Senator Larry Martin, Republican from Pickens County, the chairman of the state Judiciary Committee, working to move bills that would change the laws on domestic violence in the state through the Senate and through the legislature. And Doug Pardue, special project reporter for the Charleston Post and Courier, and their seven-part Pulitzer Prize-winning series, Till Death Do Us Part, which has spearheaded all of this. Congratulations on that series, Doug, and thank you all for the hour.
Thank you, Mike.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives,